Hi, I'm Mark Anielski. I'm your host of the Economy of Wellbeing podcast. Today, I have very special guests with me today, Dominic Conterno and Esther Robles. Both Dominic and Esther reached out to me, being recommended to me by a friend in New Zealand who suggested that we might have some interesting things to explore together. We certainly did today with our conversation about Conscious Enterprise Networks, which both Dominic and Esther founded. Dominic is originally from Paris and spent much of his life in England and is now in Bristol. And Esther is from Mallorca in Spain and currently lives in Malmo, Sweden. We both had some fascinating discussions about a wide range of subjects, which is the norm on this podcast, from the ancient understandings of ancient civilizations like Atlantis and Lemuria, what they have to teach us today in terms of consciousness. We talked about what to do with sociopaths in our midst, words of wisdom about humility in the business enterprise, and many years of experience Dominic has had in the corporate world, and what these two amazing individuals are dreaming and thinking of today. And I think Dominic's final words challenges to us. The future of humanity, he says, belongs to three primary ideas or words, namely love, joy, and play. I certainly hope you have fun time listening to our most lively and interesting conversation.
So what have you been reading since we met last time about Steiner?
I'm reading Cosmic Memory, the story of Atlantis, Lemuria, and the division of the sexes. The Knowledge of the Higher Worlds, Theosophy, Philosophy of Freedom, and Occult Science. Steiner's always intrigued me, but I've never really read him. So.
He was a very interesting character. I mean, he was quite universal. He touched more or less everything.
Yeah.
You know, mathematics, science, medicine, philosophy. He was really universal in that aspect.
That was Esther Robles and Dominic Conterno, who are my next guests on the Economy Wellbeing podcast. Dominic Conterno is the co-founder of Conscious Enterprises Network. After spending over 30 years working in the engineering and information management industries, Dominic decided to quit corporate life and invest in his own company and life mission. Esther, also the co-founder of the Conscious Enterprises Network, has 17 years of logistics, data management, and well-being experience working for international corporations and individuals. Esther excels at emotional intelligence and well-being related disciplines that has allowed her to grow insights into society's human condition. Esther joined me from Malmo, Sweden, and Dominic from England. I asked Dominic, who is Rudolf Steiner?
Yes, he was, because he was a philosophist as well, even though he actually left, he created his own group, because he left the philosophy society led by Annie Besant and Leadbeater to start his own church. I don't know if we can call them church, but it's on. And this one was quite important actually in Germany. In fact, it played a very important role in Germany at the beginning of the last century. For the good reason and bad reason, because unfortunately, when the Nazis took over, they were using some of his theories, you know, wrongly to demonstrate the Aryan race, you know. And, you know, as soon as you start going down that path, you can use any type of spiritual books and twist it to actually say what you want it to say. And the Nazis did it. And really, that was wrong.
Yeah, that's very interesting. My 80-year-old friend from London, he lives in Sesimbra in Portugal. He says, but Steiner got lost, lost his way. That's his opinion, but it's interesting because there's two common things between him and Hitler, because they were both fascinated with Faust, with Goethe, with Parsifal, the Holy Grail. And so I found that kind of intriguing, that while Steiner was, how old would he have been when Hitler was reading Parsifal in Vienna, like Hitler, or Steiner was already well advanced in terms of his.
But Adolf Hitler was an esoterist as well.
Absolutely.
I mean, he has his own Thule's group.
Yeah.
And, you know, they were quite vast. In fact, they were doing, I mean, I remember, you know, years ago, somehow they would detach this topic a little bit with one of the Indiana Jones film. When the Nazis were after the Ark of the Covenant. But indeed, it's true that they were actually looking for a lot of these archaeological tokens or icons, you know, from the Bible or from the Mahabharata, you know. So they were doing research more or less everywhere. Some people claim that they did actually find bits and pieces, but they couldn't use what they found. So who knows?
Everything about our history is still a lot of mysteries to unveil.
Yeah, and I thought that's what we would talk about today. These conversations are just free flowing. I have no objective other than, who are you two?
No, it's because we have so much to talk about. Otherwise, we'll spend like, you know, one day speaking about this, like now, you know, it's just like book, that. We end up talking about Rudolf Steiner, and then it goes to Hitler, and then it goes to God knows. So
yeah.
I'm sure that you want to do other things.
Well, I mean, I think that there's a direction, there's a momentum in my podcast towards the more esoteric right now.
Really?
So Esther, welcome Esther and Dominic to the Economy Wellbeing Podcast. You're the 83rd guest, I think, on the show.
Mm-hmm.
So tell
us. Thank you.
Tell us a bit about.
Well, thank you for having us.
You're welcome. You're welcome. Thanks for coming.
Well, I'm Esther. I'm based right now in Malmo, but I went back to London a few years ago, and then I met Dominique. Already my life changed, and after that, we embarked into a new creation of building conscious companies, in the sense of, you know, we wanted to do good with what we were doing for our communities, projects, and customers. And then we felt a little bit isolated where we were living. And so we thought, well, let's build a network outside our city. And then we started this kind of movement or community tribe that is called Conscious Enterprises Network. And yes, so now I am, we've been doing this now for a year. And Dominique can tell you more about himself.
So Esther, you're originally from where?
I was born in a beautiful island in the Mediterranean, but I thought sun is not enough for me. And then I'm from Mallorca, and I moved to the UK. I lived in Germany, Denmark, and back in Sweden.
Wow.
So, yeah.
You're Mallorcan.
Not the whole Europe. Yes, Mallorquinian. That's right.
Mallorquinian.
Yeah.
I've never been to Mallorca, but I hear it has some good fortified wines.
Yeah. Yeah, it's one of those islands everybody goes to. I don't know why.
Because so beautiful. Wow. And Dominic, your accent places you as you're French or from Belgium?
No, I'm French.
You're French.
I was born in Paris.
Ah, wow.
And I moved to the UK, and I spent most of my life actually in the UK, even though I retained my original accent.
Your fabulous Parisian accent, yeah.
Yeah, well, I was told when I came here, I was told, don't lose it, keep it. It's very good, you know, we love it, keep it. Oh, well, that's okay.
I'll speak the Queen's English, but I will keep my Parisian.
Yeah, so my life in the UK has been mostly about my inner journey, as well as working for big multinational companies. Most of my life I've been in engineering, architecture, IT, and I've met through this some interesting people And throughout the years, my inner feeling got stronger and stronger about how our civilization was actually going the wrong way. And I think now we are literally at a turning point. And it's quite interesting because, as Esther was saying, you know, when we realized this, you know, we felt very strongly about it. We thought, okay, we need to do something. We cannot carry on. And what we're seeing around, like conscious capitalism and those ventures like that, they are not really addressing the challenge. They're coming with some good, but really what is critical is not addressed. So we thought, okay, we are going to create something different. Conscious Enterprises Network, and yes, we'll be providing education. Yes, we'll be having projects. You know, we'll be doing all these good things, but we're going to do something different. We're not going to start from the top of the pyramid. We're going to start from the bottom. Everybody's important. Mm-hmm. Everybody's a leader. And this is what we're doing. You know, it's about talking to people, making them realize how important they are for the planet. People tend to say there is nothing I can do. No, there is something they can do. And it starts in their being, in their heart, in their head, you know, in their body. We got to say no. They got to draw the line. They got to challenge what they know, what they've been told for many years. Mm. And this is what Conscious Enterprises Network is about. It's a question about ourselves. What are we? Which is more important than who are we?
What are we?
Yes. And what are we going to do? Once we realize what we are, what are we going to do? What are we going to leave behind to our children and grandchildren? It's very important that, you know, we give them the caring, the love, the education, the what, you know, in the what aspect. Because today's discussion is about civilization. And this is very interesting because we are so arrogant as a race.
So arrogant. We think we have all this amazing technology.
We are everything. We cannot one moment figure out that we could actually disappear. But nature reminds us, and COVID-19 is a good example. But actually, nature doesn't need us. If nature cannot fulfill its purpose for humanity, doesn't matter. Nature will try something else.
It'll send a virus, her happy friend.
Indeed. So this is why, you know, it's very important to understand our history. It's very important to understand others in story. And you know, when you actually suggested that we could speak about old civilization, yes, I think it's important because it's a reminder that we may believe we are gods, but there were all the gods before us. And where are they now? What happened to them? Is it we're gods? Why aren't they with us? And it's a reminder that actually maybe we should be humble. And we should be tackling and tackle our challenges, tackle our inner challenges, our shadows. Because we like it or not, we are the world. Each one of us is a world. Each one of us has got the inheritance of millions of years of evolution, for the better, mostly for the worst. We have to face that. We like it or not. I think Carl Jung, you know, the psychologist, was spot on there. We have to face our shadow. There is no way we can go to the light unless, you know, we actually face it. It doesn't matter if you spend days in the church praying. It doesn't matter if you spend days, you know, in a temple meditating. If you are not ready to face your shadow, you're not going to go anywhere. This is a very important point.
It's pretty profound. So consciousness is awareness, and humility is the path to wisdom.
Humility. What is humility? Humility is an act of caring. You see, what we've lost, you know, in our world is love, self-love. Mostly. Why? What are we teaching children? Children, when they come, they're born, they got this natural movement, that natural process of learning, of expanding their consciousness and everything. And what do? We suppress that. Everything they're doing, say, no, that's not real, you know. Obviously, because imagination is a tool we're using to learn. And, you know, we suppress it. So, you know, we tell children, you know, they can't have invisible friends, they can't have this, they can't have that. And instead, we feed them with artificial concepts, which little by little.
Can we?
And actually,
yeah, I want to bring Esther in on this one, because I was just told that up to the age of 7 or so, we're actually within our mother's auric field. So we're in that kind of bubble of love. And then we enter into our father's field. So it may be at that time, at 8 to 17, that you as a male, let's say, we get confused because we came from our mother's auric field, which hopefully was an incarnation into love. And then we move into the father's maybe more wounded, egoic, masculine field, which messes up a lot of men intergenerationally.
Indeed, and I think that for men, it's very important now to go into the female side more than ever, because men have always been in the family, the ones have been providing and had to provide for the family and the children, and the mother was the one who was building the nurturing family was existing and how it should function for the better good of everybody. And because men have been always the ones who've been outside and fighting for providing. And now roles are becoming more equal. Like now, for example, here in Sweden, you will have even more women wanting to be even above men. And that has really, in some ways, damaged a lot. The it's not the ego, really. It's more the soul of the men. Because then you kind of are suppressing their mission and their dharma in society. Mm-hmm. And so it's important really for societies to really understand that everybody is playing a role. It's not that one is better than the other. It's like we are all part of the everything, going back to the community, going back to consciousness. So it's not, you know, women have always had to, in some ways, because we play such an important role in society, in some ways we've been taken for granted. Like they're always there, they're always going to cook, they're always going to provide, they're always going to take care of the children. They are actually the ones who are holding the life for such a long time.
Yeah, you're the nurturers. You're the ones that give us hugs when we're crying. And
indeed. Also, and at the same time. We also need so much the courage and the support of the male energy, the sun, the yang, that all that activity. Of course, we all both sexes have both energies, but it's important to really be mindful in which moments of our lives we are to understand which energies we ought to use. And so for me, for example, I have always observed that I always had a lot of male friends or relationships with male that were very feminine in some ways, because I think that is there is a man that has got this femininity that it comes out. It's very precious in our societies. It's very valuable. Mm-hmm. And just a man who just wants to be just male all the time, in some ways, it's not as enriching as a man who can be in some ways both or can play both roles.
The yin and yang with the little dot of light in both attributes.
Yes. Yeah, because it's all the symbol, like all the symbolisms that comes from the ancient past, our civilizations, they're still used very much these days, you know, so the yin and the yang. Comes from ancient times, you know, the cross, the circle, the triangle. We can find them all the time in our branding. In many companies up there, they have a lot of symbology. So symbols represent a lot of concepts for humanity, and also there is a lot to still explore. So what better to express meaning than a symbol and not a word, because a word can be, even though a word has vibration and a word is important, still it might be misunderstood. It might be not really interpreted in the best way. And a symbol, or like in art, a picture, architecture, or something like that, that it has more meaning to, that cannot be expressed just with our words. So art is very important as art. Well for our civilization.
So speaking of civilizations, when we met only once before, we started to explore this ancient memory of ancient civilizations. One might say now we even see evidence that it was in Turkey, and they found an archaeological site that suggests that maybe there was a great flood, a deluge. Maybe it happened 10,000, 13,000 years ago. And
indeed.
And maybe there was an Atlantis, maybe there was a Lemuria, maybe there was this even more distant land of Mu in the South Pacific. So in the spirit of that theme, what, and spirit of what Dominic, you're saying is the theme of this show is, what do we do now, right? And what do these ancient civilizations have to teach us now in this moment of a kind of cathartic moment, when a virus, which is normally our friend, has caused us all to be in fear. And yet this is the time to move, or at least be quiet and reflect on those ancient wisdom traditions. What are they telling us? What are they reminding us of?
First of all, I mean, it is a fact. And I think it is clear that they've been many different civilizations before us, and we can find traces of them more or less all over the world, on ground, but also in the sea. So it's quite interesting to see that, Atlantis, definitely. Atlantis was definitely a great civilization. I think Atlantis is quite misunderstood as well. It was probably one of the most spiritual civilizations which, Earth has had. And they were also technologically minded, not technology as we're using, as we are implementing it, as we are thinking. They had a different, they were more like developing an energy-based technology.
So Dominic, I have to stop for a minute. Why do you think at the university, I mean, I never ever heard about Atlanteans in the classics, in history class, nobody talked about it. I mean, they talk about, Sumeria and, Mesopotamia and, maybe Lucy from Africa, but like this big piece is missing that we're talking about right now.
I think Plato did actually mention about Atlanteans.
Plato did. Yeah.
So there were some people who did mention, but like anything, because it's obviously, we may have some vestige, throughout the world of ancient civilizations. It's very difficult to say, okay, this is Atlantis, this is Lemuria, this is this, this is that, But, okay, fair enough. But what we can do is use our capacity, because early on you were talking, I think, about the Akashic Records. And, everything, all the knowledge is actually contained, with us, but also around us. And
right, in the narrative, as indigenous people, like carry knowledge through the narrative, right? And in the women, through the DNA. So there is a way of, transferring that knowledge, that story, not in books, but in the vibration of, say, in the very strange word called the Akashic Record, which itself is a fascinating word that almost nobody talks about.
Well, yes, but you see, nobody talks about it, and we should, because once you understand the nature of the universe, for people, universe is matter, time, which is space and time is the same thing, and energy. Most people don't understand actually it's information as well. In fact, information is the most important aspect. And it's a new type of information which is self-learning. It's an information which expands, and it's using, and consciousness is an aspect of it. And this is a very important thing, because then we realize that we are not living in a dead universe, because we see matter as being dead. Matter is alive. Mm-hmm. In fact, life is the first creation in the universe, which goes completely against most scientific reasonings, because they see life coming accidentally out of dead matter. Mm-hmm. Now, life was always at the beginning. Life used matter for its purpose.
Well, and I'm going to raise the name Rudolf Steiner, because he talks about life force. It's like, life force? What do you mean life force? As you're saying, life. The life force has always been here.
Yes. But for many people I've talked to in the past, they were seeing life force has been specific to living beings, or any type of living beings, even if it was not a human, but animal, a plant, and so on. Mm. So everything's got a life force, but it's not just that. The life force is everywhere.
Mm.
Matter's got a life force as well. But it's different, you see, its expression is different. This is why, you got healing techniques like crystal healing. A crystal, you could say, is not alive. So if it's not alive, what do we use it for?
Why do we use it?
Yeah, exactly. So we got to, and you know, you can do healing with a piece of wood, you know, depending, you know, what you're trying to heal. So we got to be more open to these possibilities. The thing is, we've been too much conditioned. We got, you know, into a very narrow path of thinking. We got to break that and open ourselves. And it doesn't mean we're going to be what? Always, because we got limitations. The human brain is, you know, a marvelous tool, but it has its constraints. So there are things which, you know, may go wrong, you know, in a logical manner or even an intuitive manner.
Mm.
But we got to be open rather than closed. We are living in an open universe, not a closed universe. We are the ones, actually, we are an aberration for the universe, because we're closing ourselves rather than opening ourselves.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And that's like Qigong. When we're doing Qigong, I learned Qigong in China. And this is the kind of sense of when you are first connecting to the group, before you start, you are actually opening yourself to the sky, to the earth, to the horizon, and basically expanding yourself with the universe when you're doing Qigong.
Yeah,
so important.
Even the movement, immediately, I started Qigong a few years ago, and not because I went to China, but I started here in Edmonton. And you're right, it's like, it's amazing when your hands start to move, that chi, that energy, it just naturally is flowing.
And it's also when we're moving with the energy, we become the universe. And this is what maybe a lot of people don't understand. Our bodies, this is why it's so important. We love our bodies. We care about our bodies. We eat the right food. So everything, we sleep enough, because it's important for the soul, for the body, for everything. But expansion of, as Dominique says, that we're not just thinking, oh, life is just what I see, and just limit yourself to the five senses. So because the Qigong is a very good tool or art to show that it's the opposite, that we know we are expansion. And so when we are awake, that maybe we are actually dreaming, as Castañeda, other people would say, we're actually asleep. And when we're sleeping, we're actually free from the body.
We're flying.
We're flying and we're expanding.
It's impossible, but I am floating, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And this is actually why I moved to London, because I had a sleep paralysis when I was here in this flat in Sweden. And I was it wasn't nothing amazing, but it shocked me so much to be able to see myself 30 centimeters above my body in real. I was like,
wow.
Yeah, and it was nothing really that amazing, but it was so shocking for me and then to go through the experience of not being able to move my body for a few seconds or for, I was screaming as well, like, but I couldn't hear myself.
We now shift to ethical business conversation.
Ethical business.
Ethical, yeah.
Is to do business where you feel good. So you sit after profit and you feel good about it. But actually, a conscious enterprise is not only about making profit. Mm. In fact, making profit is secondary. What is important is that you have an enterprise structure which is based on education and care.
It's a very important reflection, Dominique, because you know Aristotle said happiness is living according to virtue, or Thomas Jefferson said, without virtue, happiness cannot be. And then you look at the word virtue and you say, well, who's reflecting on virtue as a business person, as a leader? So yes. we get, instead, we're caught in emotion.
Yeah.
And, feel good about a profit, but it's like, but where's the virtue? Where are the virtues that the ethics, right, of good business?
Yeah, words like virtue, ethics, and so on, they've been corrupted. They don't really mean what they used to mean. I mean, ethics, for example, I mean, companies claiming to be ethical, when in fact they're clearly not. But it sounds good, you know.
So can we talk about this? Like, I'd like to riff on this theme too, because it's also part of my book.
Yeah,
my
sure.
To say, okay, then. We have B corporations. We have like these emerging better, you know, we have the word building back better, all this nice language, but yet there's still no reflection on virtue. And we still are missing what Aristotle talked about, or Thomas Aquinas, or, you know, or the Sumerians, or whoever, you know, or the Atlanteans and Lumerians. So why do you think where there's this block, there's this, you know, this almost teenage rebellion against responsibility or accountability?
Well, I that's an interesting point. I don't know really if it's a rebellion, like a teenage rebellion. I think it's more sinister than that.
Here we go.
Yeah, yes.
More sinister.
Yes. It's a realization that to control people, to control the world, in effect, you have to be insidious, and you have to redefine lots of words, like ethics. Suddenly ethics becomes, okay, you comply to your country's laws. Okay, so because I comply to my country's laws, I'm going to send armaments in an ethical manner to another country, which is going to use it to kill children and women.
Yeah, I can have ethical warfare. Because yeah. I'm righteous, because I, on some righteous basis, it's...
Yes. So this is a sinister aspect. We've been twisting those words to actually satisfy this, you know, almost like conscious capitalism type of attitude. We want more, we are more greedy, you know, we want to get more and more and more. But we want to look good as well. We don't want to be perceived as being bad people. So we take on this mantle of being ethical, of having values, of, you know, all these things. When in fact, at the end of the day, we haven't. I mean, if companies, and I know I've worked for big corporations all my life, and I can say that, you know, ethics has been totally misused as a word in those companies. Did they have any values? There were some values, but really at the end of the day, everything was, you know, directed towards profit was king.
Money is control. King. Yeah.
And it was all about controlling people. What does a corporation do? Is they were really valuing people? Is they were really caring and ethical? They wouldn't use information against people. Mm. And they do. You know, I remember that we used to say, okay, it's been economical with the truth. You just say enough, but not the full story, but you should just say enough to confuse people, to think that you're on their side. So the management is on the side of the workers and they just give just enough to make them believe that they are with them. But in fact, they're not. you know, most of them are selfish. They, you know, they're fighting to get to the top as quickly as they can.
They're sociopaths. And,
I mean, well, you know, we live in a sociopath world. I mean, that's clear. And this is where we are in the mess we are today.
So what would Esther, what would the Atlanteans do with a sociopath?
With the what? With the sociopaths.
Sociopaths, what would they do?
With this osteopaths or sociopaths?
Oh, sociopaths. Dominic said the world is run by sociopaths, which I would agree with. So what do we do?
Yeah, what would they do with them? They will take them to maybe a meditation retreat and give them a lot of massages, good food, and make them speak about what they enjoyed about that those experiences they did, so everybody could learn not to maybe do that.
I mean, they take them to Mallorca?
Yeah, maybe, you know, I mean, it's like we punish people for being victims, I think, in our planet, you know. A lot of people are in prisons. Why? I mean, maybe some people maybe deserve to be in prisons, but maybe 99% of people don't deserve to be there. And I think it's really, we have to create communities where we care for each other, and where if somebody has done something wrong, they really understand why they've done it. Because most of people sometimes, you know, they have no choice than to do wrong in a society where nobody cares about anyone.
So, I mean, they put Napoleon on an island, right? To as a timeout, as they would say in kindergarten. You know, you can have your rest of your life time out on Elba or wherever he was. And he was a bit of a sociopath, I think.
And yeah, Dominique knows a little bit about Napoleon.
I think Alexander the Great timed out somewhere in the Khyber Pass or somewhere. And so we have, but these sociopaths of our past have had interesting life stories. And, you know, the indigenous people, if you go to Hawaii, there's a place on the big island called the Place of Refuge. And there's a tradition where if you broke kapu, if you broke the laws, you better run for your life. And if you didn't be able, if you couldn't swim across the bay and not get eaten by a shark and lived, you're allowed to go over there and hang out, and, you know, have your time out for a year. And then maybe you were welcome back, right? And in
I love it.
The movie, The Atanajarat, or The Fast Runner, which is about the Inuit in the Arctic, there's also the similar story where the women expunge the bad apple, and he's like, you're out, because if you're allowed to behave the way you are, we're all dead, right? We have to live in harmony in this cold environment. So that's another reminder that we did this regularly.
That reminds me of Athens, you know, in the old days. Every year the Athenians were voting for somebody they felt was actually you know, dangerous for democracy.
Oh, wow.
They were kicking these people out. And there was this general who actually saved Athens, you know, during a war. He was a brilliant strategist, but he became too powerful afterwards and he was kicked out. And that general finished his life in the country of his enemies, in effect, you know, which is a very interesting story.
But this gets to the heart of this matter. When I look at the world, I say, how is it that maybe 300 or 100 mostly sociopathic men are running this bad movie? And we the people of love allows this to persist. I mean it's unbelievable. We know that sociopaths are interesting characters. They behave seemingly irrationally according to our sense of good, but that's just their character type. And yet we allow these, you know, oligarchs or whatever you want to call them, tyrants, to my friend yesterday in Portugal, he posted a quote from Aquinas about what defines a tyrant, an oligarchy, and democracy. And, you know, Facebook pulled the photo off of his site.
Wow.
Yeah, I'm not surprised.
An innocent little reflection by Aristotle about these words that probably are not Aristotle, Aquinas, sorry, Thomas Aquinas. And I said, wow, what a threat to the oligarchs, a reminder of a mere reflection of what's going on here.
Yeah, we're living in societies where we cannot be ourselves and express our opinions, but I think we are here to do this.
Yeah.
And if we don't do it, then we fail. And everybody who's not speaking from their hearts and the truth, they're failing because they are not free enough and not love themselves enough to be themselves.
Yeah.
And if we're not really showing it here, where are we going to show it?
Right.
We're here for this reason.
We're
in
here.
This planet.
Yeah. And
so let's be ourselves.
Maybe talk about a little more about the conscious, what you're doing with the conscious network. And, you know, and my favorite theme is like civilization of love. Like, let's build this thing. How are we what are we going to do today? Or tomorrow's the 13th. Maybe it's a luckier number tomorrow. But
tomorrow I'm going to celebrate today. My birthday. So
oh, yes. It's your birthday.
Well,
wow. Well, I have all these Taurian. I'm May 10th. You're May 13th. You know.
Yeah, that's what I mean. It was your birthday on Monday.
The 13th is the best number ever, you know.
Yes. Oh, well. I like 14.
So.
Wonderful.
What are you actually, what are you up to? What are you doing with this network and this platform?
So, first of all, when we realized that we had to do something, is to, you know, the first objective was to start assembling people who were like-minded. Either they were very conscious or they felt that there was something else which had to be done, that there was more work to be done on themselves and in the world. And they wanted to know more about the work. So this was the first step we took. Then we looked at, okay, now that we get to a stage where we got a fair amount of people worldwide, and from, you know, we got all ranges there. You can think of academics, entrepreneurs, politicians, you know, we got a mixed bag of people. So we thought, okay, now we got to start creating tribes. You know, we got to look at what these people can do in terms of projects, you know, how they can actually work together to do things for humanity. It could be, for example, an educational project. It could be anything, really. So this is where we are. Today, we are setting up a platform to allow our members, us, because obviously we're all members, to actually create projects. So for example, Mark, if you think of something you would like to do, maybe in Africa, you know, and you think, okay, I need people. Well, Chen might be the, you know, the platform to help you to actually assemble the people to work together to deliver whatever you want to deliver on a humanitarian basis. In fact, we already got some initiatives like this. We got one which is underway with Uganda. We got another program, educational program, which we're working on. So we got different bits and pieces like this. And then when the movement will grow, we want to come up with a solution as well. And this is very important because you see, it's great to say, okay, you know, we can see the source of evil, you know, in society. We can see why we are governed by social powers. And we can see why they are there. They're there because we give away our responsibility, our authority. So they take over. So we need to come up with a different way of living. And here now, today, even though we are in a very close to the precipice, you know, we are living a very dangerous time. Mm. At the same time, we got the technology to make it possible for the whole planet to work in a more harmonious manner. So let's use the technology. You know, we got robotics, we got artificial intelligence, we got all of this. We can use that properly, and I do mean properly, because again, we don't use those technologies properly. We're using these technologies to make more money because of our greeds. Nobody knows that today we are actually using more resources in 1 year than we should be using. We're using 1.5 Earth resource. It's half a Earth resource too much, at least too much.
Mm-hmm.
So we got to go back. We got to go back to a more balanced, you know, situation. where we don't actually overstress the planet, but we use only the minimum of what we got to use. And it's possible, but we got to change the way we live. We got to change, you know, we got to have a different dynamic. We got to have a different societal infrastructure worldwide. We got to move away from the emotions of nations, from religions and so on. We got to become more human. We got to become more spiritual, more religious. That's not the same thing as, it's not because I belong to a religion, I'm religious. In fact, more likely, if I belong to a religion, I'm not religious. So we got to redefine everything.
Well, with to the point of Jefferson saying, without virtue, happiness cannot be. As you know, if virtue is religion, the Buddhist right livelihood, right being, then I'm okay with that. But that well, does require dominant structure of control. Yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
So how can we create, make people be like that? Because I mean, it sounds a bit like utopian when you look around and see that most people don't want to change anything. They don't want to move to another country. They don't want to change their slippers. They don't want to make their holidays in a different place. I mean, everybody likes their comfort and do things so they're not, you know, stressed. How can we create this individual, this new human?
I think my reflection has been, you know, having studied the very strange and esoteric kind of demonic realms, shall we say, that we actually as human beings get caught. We're created in the image of love, so we are love. That's what I believe. So that's, you know, you could say that's it. That's all you have to say. It's like, no, but it's more complicated, isn't it? Because we get caught in emotion and fear and feelings. And that's where hearts or souls get hooked. Our minds get battled. So we have a battle of kind of this weird, you know, distance from here to here to travel from the heart, from the head to the heart. And so how do you move into that heart space, knowing that love is, you know, the French word power, to be able, the power of love, not the force. It's not the force be with you. It's may the power of love be with you and is you. So this has been my theory, I guess. Like, do you have love in your heart burning? Yes, I do. Like, what are you doing with it? Well, I'm so busy paying the mortgage. And I say, oh, so what's stopping us? Oh, that relationship with money and the addiction and emotional hook of money as the lie of scarcity, which economics is about. No, it's the truth is abundance. The abundance. Yeah, and so here, the consciousness, what I see as an economist is all the language is being inverted.
Yes.
It's all being conveniently inverted, but the frequency of the truth of the word economy, oikosnomia, still rings. Mortgage still says death pledge. Happiness still means eudaimonia, well-being of your spirit. And so the consciousness has to happen when we become aware that we've been living inside of a constructed matrix, an artificial kind of world of scarcity, a fear of a lower consciousness, when in fact we live in the truth of abundance and the sun shines every day on us and all creation and says it is all good, not some is bad or some, you know, yet the bad is those who behave in a way that's incongruent with the love. So I call it the enemy of love. So the fix in my, if there's a fix, it's to wake up from this bad dream of a money addiction world.
Yes.
And money is just a creation of our imagination. But it's ridiculous. When you explain the nature of money, people go, that can't be so simple. And I said, it really is. Why isn't Macron, why isn't Mr. Johnson or Queen Elizabeth or Pope Francis saying, enough of this silly movie, we're going to make money a public utility?
True economist understands abundance, and the way you understand abundance is the way forward for humanity, because if all the economists are just looking at that type of economy that is just creating always lack and it's never we're never enough. This is why people don't feel abundant. This is why we don't see abundance outside this system. So you're looking at abundance, you're looking at it, you're looking at nature, you're looking at wisdom and tribes and all that. This is abundance. So and here, this is what comes from the past.
That's right.
So from all the civilizations.
I was talking to a quantum mathematician yesterday from Toronto. And wow. He actually has been working for the same UK company for years. So they're actually a business. They use his quantum mathematical skills to determine market, you know, uptake and all that. And he said, you know, one thing he'd never understood about economics is you have on the Y axis, you have price, on the X, you have quantity. He says, well, what if you put price on the X axis and you put on the Y axis possibilities? Because the price of your home it fluctuates based on what? The market, sentiment, you know, speculation, feelings, not the physical characteristics of the home or the vitality of your garden to grow food, none of those things, but on emotion. So price goes from the flat and modulates with, right? So that's a fascinating way of thinking about value now. And we just turned the, you know, the very simple little change in the attributes of basic economics.
Yes. I would like to go back to something we were talking about earlier on. You know, what do we do? What would be, for example, another civilization would have done with such a perhaps? Mm-hmm. They would probably, first of all, they would probably not put them in a position of power. And they would take care of them as people who are psychologically suffering. Mm. And you know, redirect them into a more healthy way of living, caring about them, giving them love, giving them the tools they need to, and the assistance they need to look into themselves and to come to terms with whatever has created this sociopathic condition.
Well, they're very efficient at getting what they want, aren't they?
Very good.
Very skilled. Let's use that character strength positively. You're very good at go to Mars, one way ticket.
suddenly I got some friends who want to go to Mars, and I'm thinking, well, okay, you know, I know you can afford it, but why do you want to go to Mars for? I mean, it's like
I'd rather go to the sun and merge with oneness and the heat of the sun.
Exactly.
Why would I go to Mars?
Let's face it. We are a technological animal. So yeah, in time we will have a technology obviously to go to Mars and beyond. In fact, we in the universe, surely we cannot be the only race which has accomplished that. I think when we're talking about older civilization, we got to remember that some of these old civilizations actually were very connected with other races. I mean, you know, we got, for example, Erik von Däniken was quite a champion at, you know, explaining that to people back in the 1960s, 70s. And it's something obviously which is not accepted by the current scientific world. But I think there is a strong, you know, argument that yes, there was definitely an interaction between mankind and also other races before mankind, like Atlanteans, Lemurians, and so on, Evites. And it would be interesting to understand more about that, what it means. Why now, today, we are so detached from the possibility of meeting other races? Why are you so fearful? I mean, you know, it's quite crazy that, I mean, there was this thing about two jet pilots, you know, chasing a UFO, and one of them started to shoot at it. That's not a way to welcome somebody, is it? I mean, can you imagine somebody knock at your door, you get your gun and you shoot at him because he knocks at your door? No, you can't do that. So we got to somehow wise up And we're not saying that, like, probably like what we are, maybe some, not all races in the universe are benevolent. So we're not saying that. But until a race has proven not to be benevolent, there is no reason why we should win. That's not, to me, that's what we are saying. But yeah, I mean, this is a very important part. And I think this is, this leads to a very interesting question, which is the creation of mankind. How mankind was created.
Sorry, humankind, I have to say something.
Yeah, humankind, sorry.
People say mankind. You're from the old school, I'm
yeah,
sorry.
Yeah, humankind, yeah.
Humankind.
From the dust. Yes.
And,
thank
and,
you, Esther. Yes. Thank you, Esther.
And if we go back to mythologies, like, you know, the Sumerians and so on, you realize that actually we were genetically created. I mean, obviously, they didn't use the word genetics, but it's obvious that when you look at their writings and so on, their mythology, that we were tempered with. So that raises a lot of questions. And really, at the end of the day, we got to ask ourselves the question is who we are. What are we doing here?
Who are we?
Where are we going? And who else is there as well we might not be aware of? And if there is somebody else, can we actually reestablish contact with them like we were, you know, thousands of years ago, and see, you know, what kind of synergy we can have with them? I mean, it was Gérard de Nerval who wrote a poem, and so it's in French, but the last one couplet of it was like that. Ils reviendront, ces dieux que tu pleures toujours. Le temps ramènera les anciens jours, which is basically the gods you are crying for will come back, and they will bring back, you know, the prosperity of the old days. Now, I'm not, you know, obviously, you know, we got to sort out our own problems. We cannot expect anybody coming from outside to sort them out for us. But we need to understand better also where we come from. Our history is totally manipulated. I mean, I remember when I was a kid and I was studying the Egypt history. And I remember our teachers telling us, okay, in, can't remember the place in Egypt, but you have all statues of pharaohs, right? And we know these ones are real and those ones are not. And okay, who are those ones? Oh, they're supposed to be before the pharaoh we know was real. But how do we know they're not real?
That's right.
No, we decided that history is that and not that. And I was thinking, hold on, I cannot agree with this. If everything is real or is not. Or at least we should be open to understand the big picture, you know? But of course, science will say, no, well, let's stick to this. Okay, but then we are going on the wrong tangent. We are not actually going to get the right conclusions.
Well, that relates to, I think, Esther, you mentioned Graham Hancock, and I was like, oh, thanks for raising his voice, because I think getting back to this theme of what are these ancient civilizations that maybe were destroyed by the great deluge, the flood, in the biblical story, but maybe that actually did happen. Maybe it happened. It's like we all got hit by the joke is the cosmic 2x4, which could happen at any time. Maybe it was an asteroid that resulted in the great deluge. And maybe it was our hubris and our arrogance that led us to our own self-destruction. And there's some who say, well, the Lemurian or the Atlanteans are coming, have returned and reminding us not to forget what they forgot. You know, they had all the technology. Steiner said the atmosphere is denser, water was less dense at that time, which meant that maybe that's how they built the pyramids. They had the benefit of nature to move stones using water, but we can't do that now because our atmosphere is not as dense and our water is denser. So all these things, we don't have a clue. And our school teachers never even explored that possibility.
Exactly. I mean, for example, I believe that, for example, if teachers were a little bit more open-minded and more imaginative, like children are, we will go to schools, and instead of teachers telling the children their concept of story, of history, their story, because it's their story.
Because it's his story, not her story, sorry.
Right. So what about the children creating their history for the future? At least that could be more expansive than just going always back to these limiting beliefs of other people. And indeed, Mark, as you're saying, I do really think that there was some kind of force, like a meteorite or something coming, because there are proofs of that. And Graham Hancock, we went to see him, right, Dominic, 3 years ago in Bath. Yes. And he was talking about this meteorite that hit the Earth. What was it, 15,000 years ago, 16,000
right.
years ago?
Yeah,
that's right. And so Graham is one of our kind of favorite scientists, because it's like, for example, I was watching the other day a documentary about Atlantis, or one of those civilizations, and you could see clearly that the stones that were close to this Japanese island, probably was Mu or Lemuria civilization, they were completely cut. It's impossible that nature can do those clear steps.
Yeah, exactly.
Still,
laser cuts.
That's right, laser cuts, because they still didn't find any signs of humans, like pottery or something like that. The archaeologists, they said, no, it's not from our ancestors. And later on, they did find, I mean, there was this professor in Japan, and he was convinced, you know, because Japanese are really connected to the heritage, to their ancestors, yes. to the history. So they're very rooted into that. So they said, well, actually, they did find some pottery. And then, of course, so if we're really following scientists or archaeologists or historians who have a mindset that is not imaginative in some ways, or at least they're not looking for other ways or perspectives, then that is influencing the rest of humanity. And I think that's really dangerous.
Well, I mean, the flip side of it is it's also exciting. And I want to kind of end our conversation on this hope theme. It's dangerous to kind of close your mind and your imagination. I mean, why wouldn't it be possible? I was in Egypt. I saw those, you know, those stones. I thought they didn't use copper rods. I bet you they had water lasers. I mean, why wouldn't they have? And why would we find evidence of it? Because they knew, as Steiner said, they knew how to access the capacity of the life force. It's like
for sound,
for frequency, for love, as a, I call it the love laser. It's like, why can't we imagine that that's possible? Just because we're like so reductionist in our, you know, limited in our thinking, but the ability to imagine, I mean, our children are constantly reminding us, if they come from the stars, they're coming here going, I came here going, what's wrong with everybody? Like, we live in paradise. Why doesn't everyone else see that? Like, you're crazy, man. You're delusional. It's like, really? I'm delusional. What? I don't know. You seem really unhappy, but I know my source of happiness, which is the access to joy and possibilities.
Mm. Yeah, this is a place for creation. The thing is, if we're not really that type of aware, most people will fall into entrapments, and then they will fight with people who don't want to fall in entrapments and want to be free. And it goes back again to, sorry to repeat, but for me, I think that children are it. If
Absolutely.
We enslave our children, we lost it as a civilization. So children
really
are the most important asset
for
our civilization. Of course, nature and all this around us is there to, like the mother, support. But if we're not really helping children to be free and to use their imagination, their abilities, then that's it. Why are we living in the times we're living in now? It's because we have created, again, everything, you know, from generation to generation. And we need to, as you said, this is the time now to create something different. And Chen, and like also every other organization that has, or groups or people or anyone who writes a book and wants to create a different future, then we are acting, we are playing in this earth and acting. And this is the most important role we have right now, to be ourselves and to act.
Wonderful. So you two, that's final countdown. We have 4 minutes left. You have 2 minutes each to make your closing remarks. In fact, you're the first two guests I've ever had on a show. So
really?
Really?
I saw a couple somewhere.
Oh, there's one other, but that was just a mistake.
Oh,
this was by design.
Well,
I just kind of did it in a way. I think Dominique, I let you speak. I think I said my last word.
Yes. What I would like to say is that there are three words, key words, which describe everything. Those are the three words which are really, we should really focus on. The first one is love. The second one is joy. And the third one is play.
Ooh.
Those three words explain everything. Love is God. Some people will call it God. Some people will call it the Tao. It doesn't matter what we call it. The quantum emptiness, you know, in Buddhism, you know, the emptiness. That's love. Joy is the act of creation, is a creation of the universes. And play, this is what we are for. We're here to play life. We are the expression of life. So those three words describe everything.